we were just discussing.
Where to start?
Where do you start? How do you, you know, obviously before we start the podcast, we're sitting here talking for a little while. And when do we, you know, we press record and then we just say go?
Yeah. We're going right now.
We're going?
Let's go.
Let's go. Ba-da-da-ba-ba, it's intro music for a nice Peter podcast. Nice Peter podcast. So welcome to the podcast. You gotta excuse me if I sound a little kind of nasally. I've got a cold and a flu sort of thing, and it's Friday, and I did not do my workout today. Yeah, I skipped it.
Still time though.
I don't feel like working out today.
Are you a morning only kind of guy too?
No, I was actually interested in doing the afternoon thing, but when you're sick, I don't think exercising is even like courteous to the rest of the people sharing the mats and equipment.
Yeah, that's really
like sniffling all over. Yeah. I'm the runny nose coughing.
You don't want to be that.
No,
there's no towel in the world.
No,
that can wipe that up.
No, it's gross. It's one of the things I hate. So there's very few things I hate, but one of them is when someone shakes your hand and then later on in conversation is like, ugh, really feeling sick.
Yes.
And then you're just standing there looking at your hand for the next 20 minutes waiting to get to a bathroom to wash it.
That's why they invented the pound.
The British currency? Oh, the fist bump.
The American currency. Of hello.
Yes, the fist pound. Pound it. As I said, welcome to the podcast. We have our first guest today. Never had a guest, seeing as we've only had one podcast. That's all right. With me, as always, is your co-host, Dante.
Hello.
And we're sitting right now in the remnants of what was a 246-minute jam session last night.
Yes, 246.
Is that what we clocked in at? So our guest today is an old friend of mine named Greg, and I thought it was appropriate. You know, here we are at the beginning of this podcast, and we can go back to the beginning of my explorations as a singer and as a musician. Really started with this gentleman about 15 years ago. We were in Fredonia, New York, and we used to, very idyllic, we would literally sit in the fields with guitars and like girls and make up songs and sing songs. That was a real thing we did.
College.
Yeah. So we'll bring Greg on in a minute. In the meantime, I wanted to discuss the fact that my mouth is still kind of on fire from the salsa that I just ate. I don't know if that's relevant.
It's all the beauty of podcasting.
That you can just discuss anything?
Yeah, discuss the fire in your mouth.
I get bored with food if it's not spicy, so I often take it too far.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll pile on the hot sauce, or I'll get the hottest salsa. And while you're eating it, it's so exciting. It's like, ooh, this is like gives a danger to food. And then afterwards, you realize that was excessive.
There comes a point you have to ask yourself, how much of this is like the food actually good? If I have to cover this much of it in hot sauce to burn all of it into my taste buds.
Well, it turns out that the vegan food we had last night, the lentil quesadilla leftover that I just ate.
Yes.
The cold lentil vegan quesadilla was a little bit lacking.
I could see that calling for hot sauce.
Needed some punch. But as we mentioned in our inaugural podcast, this is a shame-free zone, so I'm not ashamed of my hot sauce use.
No. Yeah, and it's not the hot sauce use. It just becomes, you got to look at the food sometimes.
No, it was gross.
Yeah.
Even the name, excuse me, sir, would you like a cold lentil vegan quesadilla? No, thank you. So let's go ahead and get into it. Let's bring on our guest, yep. Mr. Greg Alexander. Hi, Greg.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Okay.
So I was just telling them a little bit of the story about 15 years ago. We were in the sunny fields of Fredonia, New York.
Yes.
And, yes. Do you remember how we met? Do you remember? I remember how we met.
Would you recount it?
It was through your roommate, Colin.
Okay.
Who, interestingly enough, was told all his childhood that he was allergic to chocolate.
Yes.
And then he developed, when he was like 13, his mother told him, oh, you're not allergic to chocolate. I just didn't want you to be fat.
Yeah.
So he had this like really intense relationship with chocolate. A lot of guilt. Like I can see him having like almost some sort of a mother fetish connected to it, where his like ultimate fantasy would be to like be poured in chocolate and wear a diaper. And, I don't know.
Something
I don't,
like that.
Something like that. Which is in our shame-free zone. That's all right.
If yeah.
Colin's a wonderful man. I hope if you're listening right now, Colin, you know that I love you and respect you, and I'll pour chocolate on you if that's what you need.
We'll send you some chocolates.
Absolutely. So we met there. So I originally was friends with Colin, and then you and I had that one magical summer.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the summer I decided I was in New York City before that. I had moved away after college, actually. And then I came back to spend that summer.
I did the same thing. I had dropped out of school. Did you drop out of school also?
No, I finished it.
You finished it. Good for you. Yeah. I dropped out and then came back. So we both kind of were drawn back into Fredonia. And I got a job at Applebee's.
Yep, you were an Apple buddy.
Yeah. Were you working somewhere at the time?
Somewhere. I think in that summer, I was working at the White Inn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked there also. Kind of a terrible place. Yeah.
Were you guys like concierge or...
Waiters. I waited tables.
I actually did housekeeping.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow. I'll tell you this about the White Inn, and this is no longer the case, but it was a very fancy restaurant, and they had a bread warmer. So on your table, you got warm rolls, which are excellent. Everyone is like, ooh, warm bread. If you didn't eat all the rolls on your table, they went back into the bread warmer and were served to the next table, which I don't mind.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I think most people aren't. I think most people find that objectionable.
Because who knew who touched it or sneezed on it?
Yeah, like...
You were just talking about the handshake.
Yeah.
Thing. But you can handle the bread, but you're, like, focusing on...
Yeah. It was a dirty, dirty place. Back in the... It is under new ownership, so a disclaimer out there. White Inn is different. But back in the day, it was a dirty, dirty place full of drug addicts and just... And then it was all fancy on the outside, you know?
Yeah.
In the kitchen, it was filthy.
But I kind of hear that about a lot of kitchens in the service world. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that.
It can get gnarly. It's a bit of a, like a, it almost feels like a submarine crew back there.
Yeah.
It's a lot of swearing and innuendo and
sweat.
A lot of sweat. Yeah. It gets hot. I mean, you get 15 orders at once. And
yeah.
I tell you that they experiment with the deep fryers a lot. They deep fried a moth.
Oh
no. Yeah. No.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Why
would they do that?
Just because see what happens, you know?
Do they drain the oil afterwards, or is that now moth oil for the next day?
I can't answer that. I don't have that information.
Did they bread the moth?
I don't know. I just know they deep fried a moth while I was there.
Did they eat it?
I don't know. I would have eaten it. You would have eaten it. You eat bugs.
I've never done it.
You're into
it. But the concept of eating bugs, I keep on hearing crickets are like really good in protein.
I've had a cricket.
And?
It was like in cayenne pepper. It looked just like a cricket. And that part was gross.
I feel like it's just like land shrimp. So if you can get into land shrimp.
It is.
I'd eat land shrimp. Crickets are a little strange. But if you package it as land shrimp.
So.
Maybe I think I could get more into that. Maybe everyone else could too. So you're not eating bugs, you're eating land shrimp.
Well, check this out. Yo, regarding such things. A friend of mine in Vermont, she was a wildlife biologist, and now she's a big proponent of bug culinary arts. Mm-hmm. And she was also, still considers herself a vegetarian. But
she eats bugs.
But for bugs, yeah. So I don't know. But it's apparently cruelty-free death, in that they can they lower the bug's temperature slowly, and so that's how they die. They just sort of like
freeze to death.
Have you seen The Shining?
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
They go into like a coma state.
See, when it comes to bugs, I don't think their nervous system is capable of registering pain or regret or fear.
Yeah.
A friend who's the think tank feller, he happens to be a vegan, said...
We're both making hand motions to direct you to talk right into the microphone.
Okay, a little bit closer.
That's nice. Yeah, see?
Yeah, that is. That's nice and... Okay.
You can talk to us without looking at us.
Oh, okay. It would be cool if there was a three-way, so I could, like, look that way.
That's going to be the natural evolution of the podcast.
So, yeah, a friend of mine said that that regarding like bugs or anything that can do the following, which is respond to a pain stimulus and move actively away from the pain stimulus.
Well, yeah,
it serves an evolutionary function.
Sure, they're going to avoid pain, but I don't. When it happens, I think they just go avoid, avoid, avoid. They don't go like ouch or so oh, I'm lonely.
They're like little robots.
I think they're more like robots. Hmm. Yeah, I do. I think even I look at animals. I went to Disney World last weekend, and I don't go to zoos. I don't believe in supporting zoos. But I got to go for free.
Yeah.
So I kind of made this weird moral exception. I went to their animal kingdom, and you could see these animals with the big heads, they looked sad. Mm-hmm. Animals with small heads compared to their body looked happy as clams. They're just wandering around, same bush, eating. Oh, look, a bush, you know? Mm-hmm. I do think... Brain capacity.
Brain size
in relative, like the anteater.
Yeah.
First of all, was the weirdest animal I've ever seen and looked really happy, if that's possible. But I guess if they look happy, could they also look sad?
Yeah, and what they look to you may not exactly be what they are.
Agreed. So this is a good segue that you are currently eating a vegan diet.
True that.
And is that mostly because of your health choices or because of the animal cruelty or both? Or?
I think it started with the moral ethical component. Mm-hmm. Primarily the animal cruelty thing. Because, I mean, especially factory farms, you know, that whole thing.
It's a bummer.
Sure.
Yes.
I myself, I don't have any problem with death. You know, I believe that the killing of an animal and the eating of an animal can be a natural process. It's the lifetime of suffering that bothers me.
I totally agree. Everything's going to die. I mean, that's not the problem.
It's the suffering life.
Yeah.
We were at a restaurant. So foie gras just became legal in Los Angeles.
I heard about that.
Oh, no.
It's a bummer, man. It's like it feels just like culinary middle fingers.
Mm.
It's just so if you're not familiar out there, foie gras is a goose liver, usually, or a duck liver. It's a bird. It's fowl liver. And normally it's a fattened liver, which in the extreme cases, they like stick a tube down a goose's mouth and just pump it full of corn or whatever. And it's pretty vile.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did hear there's a humane way to do it, and the goose is prompted either by the season or by something in its diet that it wants to begin gorging itself. But it's a very timely process.
Sure.
So you can't get natural foie gras.
And this restaurant claimed... So we went to this restaurant. It was Lloyd and myself and some other people. And they were like, we have a special tonight. It's foie gras. Just became legal. And I could feel the middle fingers, you know? And Lloyd and I both almost left because of that. We didn't want to get like all annoying at the restaurant, but we did want them to know... Hey, like, we almost left your place because you're so out about your foie gras.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, respect to you, it's your business, but we just wanted to give you that feedback. And it was a really hard thing to do without being totally annoying.
I find that conundrum a lot when I go out to eat. Because I always want to ask, hey, where'd you get your beef from?
Sure.
Hey, where'd you get any of your meat from? How was it raised? Do you know the farm? And I keep on chickening out because I don't want to be... Because I don't want to be the annoying guy.
I think the time is coming where that is going to be more and more okay. And we did ask, and she said, you know, I checked with the chef, and we don't get it from a force-feeding place. It's a whatever, more humane foie gras. We made that choice. And so we gave her more feedback. It was like, you know, we would love to hear that at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Just like you advertise free-range mm-hmm. chicken and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
However, it turns out the rules... on what you need to do to call your chicken free range are like pretty loose.
Please. Yes.
Free range, abandon, I mean, it's probably better, but I would say don't rely on free range for your eggs and your chicken anymore.
It's kind of a joke. That's a bummer. I had been thinking that my consumer dollar was, I was able to like support an alternative, and Purdue's been lying to us apparently.
Oh yeah, but that's Purdue. I think luckily we live in Los Angeles with our farmers markets, and if you have a farmers market, go. It's incredible.
It's awesome.
But you do get to know the farmer.
Yeah.
You can look them in the eye and ask them.
You get to know the meat in a different way. I bought pork belly from, this might gross you out, from the farmers market, from this rancher, and it had a nipple on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Which was weird. But then it made me, like, this is an animal. This is an animal's flesh. And the nipple looked healthy. So I assumed that the animal was content when it died, or I don't know. I like to think that that makes some sort of difference. But I admire the choice to go fully vegan, because I know you love cheese.
Yeah, now I've got to kind of abandon it.
See, I don't understand the moral implications in cheese.
Well, cheese, and I found this out, or was like solidified for me recently, there's inherent in the dairy industry, there's an inherent like slaughter component. And there's also, so the in order for the mother cow to have milk that could be milked and shared, it has to have a baby. So if, for one, the baby is taken away and does not get to have its own mother's milk, and it's actually raised on formula, so we can drink the milk. So it's just as far as the animal's own autonomy and you know, quality of life. So the baby's taken away, but then if it's a male baby, it's usually sold to slaughter, and oftentimes that's where the veal industry comes from, is from the male.
I'm proud to say I haven't had veal in years. I used to love veal. Veal Parmesan?
I've had that many years ago, and man, this is tasty.
Yeah. It is a delicious food product.
But I just don't really care for veal. Don't seek it out.
It's
won't order
it. It's a bummer. It's a bummer. We get too much meat, I think. It's too cheap. Mm-hmm. Chicken is so outrageously cheap.
Yeah.
And then you know, you see a video of, like, what the chickens are, where they're at, and you don't want to eat it.
No.
I wouldn't eat a muffin if it touched the floor. And yet this chicken is just sitting in turds all day.
Yeah.
And festering and,
getting sores.
Broken feet. Yeah, it's not good.
No.
It's not good. So I do admire the choice. I'm going to cough. It sounds like I'm going to cry. Here's my illness, which is probably brought on by my meat and dairy consumption.
No.
Do you get that whiskey going on for your cough?
Just for fun. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Never mind.
The veggies, I find, just trying to eat more veggies. I don't know if you're trying to substitute some more veggie days in your diet. I think that's a good first step towards, like, being able to justify higher priced meat in your day, in your life, because then it's a special occasion, you're having it once or twice a week, and then it becomes like, oh yeah, no, that chicken is worth $12 instead of $3.
And it should be, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be worthwhile if that's what you enjoy as well. It's going to taste better, and it's going to be better for you, and you're going to appreciate it more, because you're not just like grabbing any old thing that comes along out of the fast food, you know, aisle.
Yeah.
The one argument that really bothers me is when people say, oh, I don't want to know. Don't tell me this. I don't want to know. And I think it's our responsibility to be aware.
Absolutely.
To know, hey, you're eating this. You got to know where it comes from.
I feel like when you have the entirety of human, like, consciousness and information, like the world's library in the palm of your hand and accessible to you at any time in the first world, learn. Just start to learn about things.
It's important.
It's there for you.
It's important.
And it's easy.
And it's good.
It's easier than ever.
People are scared of knowing the truth.
Yeah.
So that's enough about food. I really wanted to talk to you about singing.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I think there's a lot of people out there who, like myself 15 years ago, was a little bit scared to sing. I think the one thing I learned the most from you was singing with abandon. You know, not being like, you know, it might sound awful, but you're going for a note that you think you can't hit. And if you don't hit it, it's okay. Learn how to control those muscles even more. It's like doing push-ups, you know? The first time you do push-ups, it's a little awkward and weird, and then you keep doing them, and eventually. So how did you get into singing? What's your background?
Well, I was doing it ever since I was, well, sort of seriously, you know, quote-unquote, ever since I was 8 years old. In terms of, you know, I always did the school music program, and luckily I had one. And a lot of other places, unfortunately don't. They're getting cut, so that's unfortunate. And I was also blessed to have, grew up in Saranac Lake, New York, in the Adirondack Mountains of super northeastern New York State. And we had a thing every summer called the Adirondack Festival of American Music, which was like a month or so in the summer when all these like world-class professionals, voice teachers, choir singers, orchestral members would come to my small little town in the Adirondacks and do this whole workshop. So I got to have be mentored under like the director and founder of the Texas Boys Choir, who, you know, Igor Stravinsky, if you've heard of him, old classical composer.
Heard of that guy, yeah. He mentored you?
Not Stravinsky. Stravinsky, I was going to say, like, called George Bragg, like, he was...
He's the Texas Boys Choir guy?
Yeah. He was worked with him, and...
That, I love how things connect. So you went to this program. Some dude from Texas came, took time out of his life to help you learn how to sing.
Yeah, exactly.
You took time out of your life to help me learn how to sing, and now, you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to sing and make music and share it with people that I hope it makes people happy. It's amazing how those little chain of events goes.
Yeah.
So can you sing a little bit for us, just so the people out there can hear?
What should I sing? What should I sing? Maybe I'll sing something like this. But this is just a way, this is just a thing that I can sing.
That's very nice already.
Yeah.
That's very nice already. You just, you got to control over your voice.
Yeah, Greg's an angel.
Yeah.
Oh, guys.
It comes from, I think, just a lifetime of experimenting with singing and learning different ways.
That's what I say a lot to people is just like, you got to find a place and a comfort. If it's your own private space, find the space you need to, or go out in the middle of nowhere and just try your voice on for size. You have to like sort of, you have to like a suit, you have to like wear it out and wear it in and get in there and walk around in it and explore all the corners. And
so I have to ask, as growing up in Saranac Lake, would you just kind of, you know, mosey through the mountains and be yodeling and you know what I mean? And like being out in nature and really experimenting with your voice, or were you doing a lot in a studio? Would you do in your bedroom, in your basement?
Mostly, I think I remember doing it in my bedroom growing up. I remember, like, one time particularly, like, I had Mariah Carey's Vision of Love single.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, playing that over and over again and trying to get the riffs and the riff section and stuff.
Sure.
Like, so I would do that stuff in my bedroom. And I also didn't listen to a lot of musical theater too in that era, and classical and jazz.
Do you have a favorite musical?
No, sorry.
Got a lot of them. My favorite musical is Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, that is a great one. I never got to be in that, but
I didn't know that until I met you.
Jesus Christ Superstar?
Yeah.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. I used to play that one.
That has good stuff in it. Oh, it's good stuff. I would like to do that someday, probably.
So do you have any, you know, any nuggets of advice for people out there who maybe think they can't? Because I believe everyone can sing, and sometimes it's just believing in yourself and kind of forcing yourself to get better. To, you know, it when you sing a note and it's off, and believing that you can do it even better the next time you try.
Yeah.
So that would be my nugget of advice.
But I mean, I would piggyback on that and say that's. It's probably that confidence and that willingness to experiment and whatnot, that where you try singing, try it on for size. As I said, that whole thing about, you know, trying out your voice, looking into all its little nuts and bolts and getting used to it and comfortable with it. So then you know where it's weak, where it's strong, where it's getting high, where it's getting low. And that thing where you can sing. And if you have the other aspect is if you have your ears open. I was telling, you know, your lovely girlfriend the other day, that big wide open ears is like something that I think maybe I was told when I was a kid, but I feel like as a musician in general, that's just like some of the best advice, to just cultivate that listening and that it's being present in the tone, like find a way to kind of ride your voice, or just be like, focus all your energy, close your eyes, so to speak, and just get into what the voice is doing, be there. So then you know that when it goes up, da, 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 da. If you're out of tune, you can hopefully hear it with your big wide open ears, and then you just got to believe that you can tune it and experiment. You know, basically, even if you don't know theory, you don't know up or down or whatnot, just try moving the tone until it sounds right, you know.
That was a big, I remember doing this exercise with you many years ago where you go out of pitch on purpose. And I talk about this sometimes in songwriting, where sometimes you need to write a bad song on purpose to be writing songs. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of worrying, oh, is this song going to be good enough? Just write it. Make it bad on purpose. Write a bad song just so you start that process flowing. And I remember sitting with you and singing notes and taking them out of pitch and hearing it go like,
and that's super fun. If you can get some friends who want to sing together, do that. You know, just hit.
Yeah.
We could demonstrate that.
Let's do it. I have a little bit of a cold, but go ahead.
So we'll do like a falsetto kind of tone, and we'll all go unison. And then how about who wants to go up or down?
Why don't you move? We'll try and see.
Okay, you guys hold, and I'll go a certain direction.
All right. Do. Do.
Oh, were you trying
to? Oh, no.
We're trying to be unison?
We're trying to be unison. It's a little tough with the headphones.
It might be. Do. Do.
Oh, that is incredible. I don't know what that sounds like to you out there, but in here, it's like swirling around in my
head.
Yeah,
you can feel the airwaves moving.
And so that's a great exercise for ear, and it's interesting and fun. You can annoy people with it who aren't doing it.
It helped me stop being afraid of sounding bad, realizing that, you know, just having the experience of sounding bad on purpose or sounding off pitch on purpose as a way to learn what on pitch feels like. Mm-hmm. It was great. Really opened my eyes. So you might know Greg from the Awkward White Guys in Shorts song and video. He was also in the video. So that was the last time he was coming through town. We sat down, if I remember correctly, I was just on the drums and you were on the piano, and we just started making that up.
Yep.
And it turned into, you know, a relatively bigger song and bigger video.
You came in shorts that day.
I was wearing shorts, which
and
I was.
You happened to be white.
And relatively awkward.
Yeah.
And through that song, you know, which was just me getting out a fear and a self-consciousness, I've become a pretty proud short wearer since then. I've accepted my legs as what they are, and it was a good experience. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
It's good times. I remember going to the creek with you in Fredonia, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Many nights, the creek. There was this creek. You had to walk through a grapevine field to get to it, and we would pack a little book bag full of Jenny Light beer cans and
hike our guitars down there.
Put our guitars in and put the beers in the river to get them cold, mm-hmm. and we'd light a fire and we'd just sing for hours, just making things up, and that's really where I started that journey of improvising songs and singing funny songs and making people laugh and smile. And it was really great. Everybody should have a friend like Greg.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you do. You probably have a friend like Greg near you. He's probably just a little different, marches to the slightly different beat.
Yeah.
So if I'm not mistaken, you're roaming the country at the moment.
Yeah, at the moment, that's what it seems to be. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's not a total roam, but it's like, yeah, this kind of circular migratory pattern has developed.
Where were you before you came to Los Angeles?
I was like Northern California.
And what were you doing in Northern California? You can talk about it. Yeah.
I can talk about it. I was working on a farm. It was a medicinal farm. It grew medicinal herbs.
Sage and whatnot?
I think a relative of sage.
Okay.
Primarily. But working on that, and that was just a little teeny piece of the arc. But that's sort of become a tradition, fall in Northern California for that, and it's a good excuse then to go down to LA somewhere before or after
sure.
that.
So it's like the medicinal farms have a weed harvest.
Yeah.
Essentially. And so there's all kinds of work and all kinds of people coming together to basically sit in a room and trim up marijuana, is that right?
Yeah, that's what it is.
That just sounds outrageous to me.
It's pretty outrageous. I mean, to just interact with so much of that stuff.
Pounds?
Pounds and pounds and pounds. Pounds and pounds.
That is wild. I instantly picture the scene from New Jack City where they're like processing all the cocaine and everyone's like naked to make sure they don't steal it, and it's this really secure, tight environment. Is it?
It's a lot like that. Yeah.
Really?
There's nudity and body cavity searches.
How many people are in the room with you trimming fresh marijuana?
I've been in many different situations. I've been in a teepee by a river, like out in the. There's just this whole gamut, the whole range of things, a teepee by a river and like a community farm. So I've done it with by myself from like one to maybe the most number of people I did it with was 40.
There
was
40 people in a room all trimming.
That was on a property or at a farm. So there was in one room, there'd be like nine, and then downstairs within our five. And then outside there was like pop-up tents with another 10 people in each tent.
So I've become, living in Los Angeles where marijuana has been legal for several years now, I've become a little used to this. I imagine to people listening other places in the world besides, you know, Colorado, California, and Vancouver, I'm sure there's a few other places. Mm-hmm. This just seems a little crazy. You're at 40 people all openly and, you know, getting paid legally to work on a weed farm.
Yep.
It's crazy.
It's a whole new world.
It is kind of a whole new world.
Beginning.
And to think in other places you would all be criminals.
Yeah.
You know? It's a little outrageous.
Yeah.
Little outrageous. I don't want to take one stance or another, but I do think that it's a little silly that in one place, you're farmers and workers, and then if you cross a state line, you're all felons.
Yeah.
It's a little silly.
You talk about Oklahoma or Nebraska suing Colorado.
I have heard about this.
Yeah. Because of that same sort of thing.
Yeah.
And people are like, I was just over there, and it was cool, and now I'm getting arrested over here,
it's a mile away. It's a little silly.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, we have a big country, so it's hard for us all to adapt at the same speed. I've just been reading that in Mississippi, in their sex education program in their schools, they're not allowed to talk about condoms. It's against the law.
Currently?
Currently.
To talk about them?
Correct. So, but according to the statistics I read, 76% of teens report having sex before they graduate high school. So you've got the majority of people in the school system sexually active, and you're not allowed to teach them how to protect themselves.
Any statistics on teen pregnancy in Mississippi?
I believe it's fairly high.
Yeah.
I don't think I know how to spell Mississippi.
Sure you do.
M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they taught you well.
So I'm not trying to hate on you, Mississippi. If there's any listeners from Mississippi out there, maybe you could leave a comment and tell us what it's like. To live in a place that wants you to pretend that there's no condoms. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. And we were talking about the Dutch on the last podcast about how their attitude towards all these things is very different, much more honest, and like, I don't know, it seems healthy to me.
Yes.
So, yeah, if you're living in Mississippi right now, please let us know what it's like. Is that how the community feels? Does the community support this law, or is it just a few noisy people?
Yeah, do people not talk about it? You know, it's like, let's just leave it alone.
Yeah.
It's strange.
It's very strange. Very strange. So you also play the piano.
Yeah.
And you asked me a powerful question last night. So I play a lot of instruments, but I don't work very hard at them. I don't practice very diligently. And I've never seen you on any day where you're not practicing the piano.
Huh. And that could be partly due to the fact that it helps to have a piano to practice on.
Sure.
And also, often when I'm in your presence, there's a piano or two.
I have a lot
nearby.
Of piano.
Yeah.
I currently am the owner of three pianos, proudly.
Well, yeah.
But the two of one of them is our relatively expensive studio piano. It's right behind me right now. And but the other two, one was the Freddie Mercury piano from the video, and we got that for $150. And then the other one, I think, was $200, and it's also a fine working piano. So,
yeah,
pianos are out there. It's just a matter of, you know.
I would say I think Dante and I were talking about it. I feel like being a piano player, I'm biased, but I feel like every household, you know, worth its salt should have a piano.
Every house, you know, it's difficult in an apartment, but why not?
Yeah.
You know, if you're out there, I don't know why I keep switching to you out there, but having a piano in your life, it makes your life better. And you can get one for relatively cheap. And if somebody comes through your house who knows how to play the piano, you could end up having a night just like sitting around the piano singing songs. And it's awesome. And and you can also start to learn the piano if you have children. Like, I had a piano in my house growing up, and I think that's a lot of why I play music, is because it was there. It was
100%.
There to fiddle around with. I was very lucky. I had old computers to take apart and a piano to bang on. And now I work in music and computers.
So yeah, that's great.
Definitely a direct line. But talk to us a little bit about, like, it seems like you're always striving to become, I think you're one of the best piano players I know. Maybe we'll do a little, give a little listen, but are you always striving to get better?
Yeah, well, my goal is to get better and better and, you know, everything I do and stuff. But, I mean, if anything, unfortunately, I feel like I'm a little, like, maybe we all can be sometimes, like, self-critical in that I feel like I could always be doing more to get better and better.
Sure.
And definitely, I would recommend to people who are trying to get great at an instrument or whatever, like, this sort of the idea of that some crazy, amazing, talented people have done, which is like practice for like up to 5 hours a day every day.
That's a lot.
It's insane. Yeah, it's like that's all you're doing. But that's if that's your passion, you know, and that's your main gig, and you love it, then you should. But that kind of thing, a lot of great Jeff Beck, and I think Bobby McFerrin, Jeff Beck guitarist, Bobby McFerrin, crazy vocalist, but like I did that modality for sure. A lot of people, conservatory trained people who are world class. Three to five hours a day, every day for years on end. So that is something I sort of hold up to as a standard, and I feel like if I did do that, it would be that much better. So I don't get to do that much, but I'm always working through stuff in my mind, like, and singing. Like, singing is an instrument I have with me all the time.
Yeah.
So always trying to sing and harmonize and jam out. And if I hear something on the radio or someone else sing something, I'm like, oh, can I do that? How can my voice do that riff or that note or that thing? You know, try it.
And stuff. It's great. So. It's that fearlessness that is inspiring to the rest of us, and certainly was inspiring to me as a younger man, of just not being afraid to sound bad at something the first time you try it, and knowing that the second time you're going to sound a little bit better, and the third time, and the fourth time, and the fifth time. When me and Dante were recording the Shea Carl and the Shea Tard song, It was in the high 60s was the take we eventually used.
Mm, yeah.
I think it was about 60, 66 or 68 take. And I tell that story to people because it's important to me. It's like the song when we started playing it really wasn't that magical. It was a decent song, but as we kept going and kept trying and kept pushing, it started to become much more natural until it felt like something really great. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know. It's
that kind of striving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Diligence.
And so, pushing.
Yeah. And that's something with that pitch, the pitch thing, too, we were talking about with the voice. It's same sort of thing in other instruments. But if you, like, you're hitting a note and you're like, that doesn't sound right, you know, don't just go, oh, I suck.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly the trap that a lot of people fall into.
Yeah.
And I've heard people say, I can't sing. And I think the real answer is, I'm not as good as singing as I will be if I keep believing that I can sing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people hit a thing, and then they think they suck, and they don't suck. It's just your muscles aren't developed.
Yep.
Can you play a little piano for us?
I could.
I'll switch seats with you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that little piano jazz.
Yeah. I don't know. With singing and piano and instruments, it's always like this. So I feel somewhat schizo.
What do you mean?
Because I try to do, kind of try to do so many different genres, or be able to do so many genres, that I kind of don't, it's sometimes hard to delineate or I feel like decide, okay, now I'm going to, this is going to be country style, or this is going to be R&B or whatever.
So do you have trouble finding what your voice is?
Sometimes, yeah.
I run into that problem as a rapper. So I would never have identified myself as a rapper. And then we started doing the rap battles. I was always doing different voices and different things. And I have only a few that I can do. But when it comes time to actually rap as myself, I don't know what I sound like or what my perspective is. Because
yeah,
I've never
yeah.
really done it. So Lloyd writes rap songs. So he has his own authentic voice as a rapper. Me, I usually pretend to be Abraham Lincoln and then rap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can understand that.
Last night when you were doing the raps?
The math rap?
Yeah, and a little bit before that, you were doing some of the texts, yeah, from Epic Rap Battles and whatnot. Was that sounded kind of...
I was experimenting.
Yeah.
I was experimenting.
That's authentic.
With trying to find my voice as a rapper.
Yeah.
You know, as I look at the future of my music career, I've no idea what I am or what I do or what to do. I've been doing rap battles for so long that I have no idea what else there is.
Yeah. Are you still thinking about a children's album?
I've always thought about a children's album. Yeah. I think that would be so great. I think children's music is like, it's really important. I think I could do it. And I think I could make some music that doesn't drive parents crazy. But we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Time will tell.
Time will tell. So we, in talking about the rap battles a little bit, we've been discussing, for those of you out there wondering when the next one is or what's going on. So we're done with our break and we've started working on it again. But the working on it process takes a long time. So right now we're in the process of trying to decide who to do. So we're looking at suggestions. We're going over things that have been suggested. And there was one that you like a lot. Can you tell them what it is?
Wait, which one is that?
The
silent one?
The silent one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll tell you. It's Mr. Bean versus Charlie Chaplin.
Which I am also excited about as an idea.
I love it, too.
It came up, I don't remember how, it came up in a conversation, and I've seen it suggested. I've seen Mr. Bean suggested, Charlie Chaplin suggested. I've seen a lot of silent characters suggested, and I've always kind of mocked the suggestion. I've been like, those people are silent. What? You're an idiot.
How are we going to do that?
I've seen PlayStation versus Xboxes. Like, those are machines. But there was something, I think it's because I just recently watched a Charlie Chaplin movie that it got me a little more excited. And I also realized, and have come to peace with, how much I kind of look like Mr. Bean sometimes. Mm-hmm. I've got a Mr. Bean.
Got a very rubbery face.
I got a rubbery face. And that's okay. I've come to peace with that. So there is that, you know, it's with a project that has become popular and whatever, it's exciting to try new things with it and see what else you can do with it. And doing a silent rap battle definitely sounds very interesting to me.
And there will be words, right, you think?
I don't know. I don't know how we would
gestures.
Do it.
Gestures.
Yeah, I really don't know how to do it, but I was inspired when you said you liked the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
there's a lot of people that watch them now, and I want to do different things with it to really delight certain types of tastes, and your opinion on music and stuff is very important to me. So I'm guessing you weren't a huge fan of like Leonidas versus Master Chief.
Yes, it wouldn't be. I enjoyed it though.
But that's
well done.
Thanks, but it doesn't like call out to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although we were playing some Call of Duty earlier, Greg did very well at. We only play zombies in this office.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even. I've never even played the real game of Call of Duty. We're zombies strictly, and we played some zombies and
shot some
zombies.
Stabbing.
Good time.
Yeah,
a little stabbing, a little shooting.
Yeah.
You took to it quickly.
Well, I've been playing a lot of GTA recently, which is a whole different story.
How's that been treating your psyche?
It was just that, you know, what traveling is interesting and the kind of thing that, because I sort of take on the shape of the lives that I come into contact with and the places. So, you know, here visiting Pete and Dante, hanging out in the studio doing a podcast.
Sure.
Jamming for 240 minutes. I like that. I like that a lot. And the place I was at before, I was hanging out with some people, and one of the gentlemen there, a lovely feller, was playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto. So, you know, when in Rome, I jumped on in, there is a moral sort of skepticism or an ethical
conundrum. Yeah, no, it's bad for society.
I think probably, did you see or hear, I mean, I don't know if I want to promote, like, put it forward, but there's a guy who maybe went a little crazy who, acted as if he was in Grand Theft Auto, and they had like aerial video of him, and he's basically like going into intersections, like stopping cars, pulling, like opening the door, throwing people out of their cars, driving off.
Yeah,
and
I'm surprised that hasn't happened more.
Yeah,
it's such a realistic game now. I remember the 2D version of Grand Theft Auto. It was a bird's eye view, and these little cars, and you run little tiny people over, and it was hilarious. It was little stick figures and stuff.
Yeah,
now. You can, like, see the tears.
Yeah.
And see the fear in people's faces.
Yeah, that's effed up.
It's a little much.
For sure.
I haven't played it much, but I know when, after you do something horrible to someone in society, and the cops begin to come, your heart instantly starts pounding.
You're like,
oh, I have seconds to live. I don't know how I'm going to get out of here. So perhaps that's what does tamper from people. You know, just taking AK-47s and bazookas to Cadillacs in Los Angeles. But the real-life police coming after you, it's a real, very real, very palpable, scary feeling.
Jumping fences and stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you die in Grand Theft Auto, you just get to start again at the hospital.
Yeah.
And that's not what happens in life.
Yeah. I was one of my favorite things to do, speaking of the reality, I was telling Pete, which is kind of neat. I might recommend it to people playing Grand Theft Auto, but I'm sure you did something like this, because I think people do a bunch of things because they get bored. But it's like stealing a helicopter or a jet and flying to like the edge of space, like way, way, way up, and then jumping out and like sort of skydiving down into the city and maybe parachuting and landing on top of a building, a skyscraper.
Yeah,
or something.
I've never tried that.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could. Do you have a parachute all the time?
Most of the time. Or you have to get it, but it's like it's replenishing or something.
That's amazing. Comes back.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Grand Theft Auto, music, murder. It's all a part of this wonderful life. Greg, I want to thank you for being our first guest on our podcast, for sharing your music with us, for helping inspire me to a life of music. It's good to see you.
Anytime, yeah. Good to see you.
On behalf of us all, until the next podcast, you know, try something. Try something scary.
Yeah.
If you've never sang, give it a go.
Don't be afraid to hit that wrong note.
It's either just flat or sharp.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an adjustment. That's all. Mm-hmm. That's all. So let's play them out with little awkward white guys in shorts, can we? So have a great day. Bye.
Between the two. Snow doesn't fall here anymore. Snow doesn't fall here anymore. Snow doesn't fall here anymore. It's a link between the two.
Scratch yourself.